You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to thank you for joining us after a Boston Celtics win, 134-129 over the Oklahoma City Thunder, which was the most exciting game in Boston sports on the day. Congratulations to the Patriots for winning a boring-ass Super Bowl and their sixth Super Bowl, and nobody cared. I can't believe how nobody cared. I was in downtown Boston watching this, and at the end of the game, everybody's like, hey, all right, we won, and everybody paid their tabs and left. So, like, oh. So the Celtics and the Thunder actually played the most exciting game of the day. We're going to talk about it. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Victory Jam.
We're also known as the Rain and Jays. And so the Celtics beat the Thunder. A nice game. The Celtics are now in third in the East, tied technically with the Philadelphia 76ers. But Celtics have beaten the 76ers twice in their two games, so they own the tiebreaker. Celtics are currently the third seed. In this game, Kyrie Irving, 30 points, 11 assists, his 14th double-double of the season. The Celtics had, eight guys in double figures. This is a very spread-out scoring game for the most part, Sam. And game of runs, the Celtics never really put it away, but they did enough. And I think basically this was Kyrie and Al Horford and then everybody else.
Yeah, those two guys really shine tonight. The whole team. I mean, the fact that the Celtics were able to drop 134 points on the Thunder, who I think coming into the game had the second best defensive rating in the league, or maybe tied with the Celtics. They are supposed to have a very good defense, and they do. They have a very athletic team, but the Celtics' offensive execution I thought was great tonight, and it starts with they finished with 36 assists, but you're right. 11 of those assists came from Kyrie, 9 came from Al Horford, and the other another 7 came from Marcus Smart. It was really concentrated in those three guys, but it was the two-man game of Kyrie and Horford that I thought was kind of the biggest takeaway from that. The Thunder were really trapping Kyrie hard coming off pick and rolls, and he was passing it to Horford. And Horford, I just felt like, was making the right decision for the most of the night, whether it be passing to the weak side, where we find Marcus Smart for an open three, knocking down the jumper. It just was kind of a very efficient and the great Al Horford game. And then Kyrie was basically from 2 points, like I think he only missed one or two two-pointers the entire night. He was basically automatic anytime he was going towards the rim. And late when they really needed buckets from him, he got that big bucket with the left hand kind of rolling around the top of the rim there. But he continues to be fantastic. And he should, now that the Celtics are higher in the standings, I think he should be more considered for MVP because he's just having a fantastic year. Just with the efficiency, 30 points on 14 of 19 was insane tonight.
Yeah, this is exactly what we thought. Remember, we were talking about these, and Jay and I were talking about the storylines moving forward. And one of the things that we talked about moving forward was Kyrie as a potential MVP candidate. As the Celtics continue down this path of climbing in the standings and moving closer to that top seed, I think we're in a situation now where as we get further away from that 10-10 start that the Celtics had, that disappointing start that the Celtics had, I think we can start to maybe reassess. Like, the Celtics have been seen as this disappointing team, and mostly because they started 10-10, and then they had that three-game skid in that Florida, Orlando, Miami, Orlando, and then up to Brooklyn trip. That was the Kyrie leadership thing. That was the backlash thing. And they came back and they beat the Raptors, and Kyrie had that I call LeBron thing. And then after that, honestly, I think Kyrie's just kind of been like sour after that. But the public perception is that things have been bad in Boston. And ever since that 10-10 start, they've been 24-9. And that's a pretty good record. And so I think it's time to kind of reassess what the Celtics are. They're 22-6 at home. They still have a losing record on the road, which is bad. But they are turning things around. They still have the second best point differential in the East. If you throw out that Chicago game, I think it drops to third, but it's close. And they are, I think, a good team. I think it's time to start looking at the Celtics as a good team and not a struggling team. Like, I think people still see the Celtics as a struggling team. They are now the third seed in the East, and they're three games behind Toronto in the loss column. Like, they could theoretically get within striking distance or actually into the second seed going into the All-Star break.
And I think a lot of it just has to deal with how much they're clicking offensively. I mean, turning in multiple over 30 assist performances, it feels like the kind of the Brad Stevens special. There's been critiques out there of his offense being too, I guess, equal opportunity, in that he doesn't like, and that's one of the reasons why they don't get to the line as much, or they don't feature Kyrie as much. But the offense is really clicking. The ball movement's been there. We've seen multiple games where guys are getting, it's probably like six plus guys in double figures. The offense has just really been solid. They still maintain that defensive rating, but I think we saw tonight that they had some defensive lapses. It felt like the Celtics were methodical and patient on offense and doing a lot of good things ball movement wise. And then the Thunder immediately had like a counter basket just because Russell Westbrook plays with this insane pace that is really something to marvel at in person. But the Celtics offensive execution against one of the best defenses in the league, and just more generally, pretty much since the new year, has been fantastic. Other than those three games, they really are just scoring the basketball with ease. And it's basically been behind just a very consistent and all-around good offensive play of Kyrie Irving scoring the basketball and just facilitating. It feels like the ball movement is really locking into place, and that's just kind of propelling them forward. The schedule has been easier, and they have played a number of games at home, but you can't fault them for winning. Like, they've been, like you said, 24-9 basically since that stretch. They've been one of the better teams in all of the NBA, and there's no reason that like they're not contenders right now.
Well, look, that 24-9 starts on November 26th when Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris were the regular starters in the lineup. Since November 26th, no team in the NBA has won more games. The Celtics, the Nuggets, and the Bucks have each won 24 games. Since November 26th, only the Warriors have a better offensive rating, 116.7 to Boston's 116. Since November 26th, the Boston Celtics have the fifth best defensive rating. And since November 26th, they have the league's best net rating. They have really turned it around since that day. And I am here to petition officially that we declare November 26th as the official beginning of the Boston Celtics season.
Smurf Day. I would say that. We can retroactively say that. We'll celebrate it as Marcus Smurf Day. And that's when everything officially matters. Anything that happened before then doesn't count.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because since then, the Celtics have been one of the best teams in the league. And maybe you could say the best team in the league, because they are right there amongst everybody. Like, the Milwaukee Bucks have a case. But even the Celtics, like, if you look at the offensive rating, the Milwaukee Bucks are still way down in ninth. The Celtics are fifth on defensive rating, while the Bucks were first. So they're, like, right in there. And like I said, net rating, the Celtics are number one overall. I don't know. I'm just saying. And, you know, we can always cherry pick stats and make it look like however we want. So this is how we want to do it. The Celtics since that switch. And really, that switch is where this team started to turn things around. I mean, I'm joking, but at the same time, they went through that stretch of the early 20 games, and Jaylen Brown had that fall in Dallas, and that might have been the impetus where Brad Stevens said, hey, let me make this change. And since that change, things have been a lot different. And not only have things been different, it's been different for different players. It's been different for Jaylen Brown, who has flourished in that bench role, because I think in that bench role, he's able to be the guy and not sit around and wait for his turn. I think Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris in the starting lineup have been good, like, dirty work guys, as Kyrie and Al Horford and Jason Tatum do what they need to do. And then Gordon Hayward has been slowly progressing, and we'll get into what he's been doing after we take a short break. We're going to take a break. We're coming back real quick on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Paul George was in town here with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and this was an opportunity for people to talk to Paul George about Gordon Hayward, because there is some similarity. People saw Paul George have a catastrophic injury and come back. Gordon Hayward is coming back from a catastrophic injury. So Paul George said, quote, just honestly, don't be so hard on yourself. I was fortunate, again, when I got hurt. Following season, I got to play six games, and that kind of helped me into the transition. The fact of the matter is, everybody's expecting Gordon to be Gordon from Utah, but he's not. He's got to take strides, take steps along the way. Fans can't be too hard on him. He can't be too hard on himself. The game is different. You get hurt, you sit out a year and try to come back. The game is totally different than the way you left it. Interesting comments. And in New York, I talked to Gordon Hayward in the locker room a little bit about his slowly returning athleticism. Now, I go back to the game in Charlotte where I saw that cutting dunk. I go back to now this Knicks game where he had that alley-oop, which was just a little extra spicy. He didn't have the greatest game against the Thunder. However, I will say that it's important to note that Gordon Hayward now is 4 months into the season. He lost 4 months of the summer, and this right now, this part of February, is where Gordon Hayward was supposed to be to start the season. And I joked a little bit about November 26th being the start of the regular season for the Celtics. I really feel like this February 1st is kind of, in a way, a start of the season for Gordon Hayward, because these 4 months that he has been playing with the Celtics were supposed to be the 4 months he was playing over the summer. And that's not to make any sort of excuse for the guy. It's just the reality of it all, that he's just now, this is where he was supposed to be for the start of the season. And I thought that it was very important for Paul George to kind of relay that message, and for fans, again, and I know I'm the shepherd of this message, just to be patient when it comes to Gordon Hayward. I thought he did a lot of decent things tonight, just didn't show up in the stat sheet. I still think he's getting a little bit more athleticism back. I think he's been defending fairly well. He's spent a lot of time trying to defend Paul George, which is damn near impossible to do. The dude's an MVP candidate. So I just think it was very nice and accurate of Paul George to make these comments tonight.
Yeah, the thing that I think Gordon Hayward has to work on, and it's something that I think you'll hear a lot of coaches talk about, just and mostly in cliche mode, but it's consistency. Tonight he did not have a great offensive performance. He actually got owned at the rim once, if I remember correctly, and he did have a hard time stopping Paul George. But you know what? Everyone on the team had a hard time stopping Paul George because he was kind of insane tonight. And I'm just looking at his stat line. I didn't realize Paul George himself took 16 threes tonight, which is absurd. He only made five of them. But I guess if Russell Westbrook's no longer going to shoot threes anymore, Paul George has to do it. But for Hayward, it's got to be his consistency. It felt like against Charlotte, and maybe this was this something having to do with like the way Charlotte was playing defense, but it was Hayward getting it, and he's doing his best to get into the paint and really like figure it out later, but get it into the paint first. It just looked like he had less aggression tonight. The shots he did take, or I remember at least one or two pull-up jumpers that weren't the greatest, but, I mean, sometimes the Celtics fall into that. So it's just he's clearly has shown bursts, but it's now at a point where if we are declaring that at the start of the season, he has to come up like and have those bursts in every single game. And he's lucky at this point that the Celtics are so deep and they have players like Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier can kind of score on the second unit. But really, if the Celtics are going to kind of reach that next plateau or the next plane, I think he really needs to come in and be the leader of the second unit and be like a guy, a kind of a six-man style guy off the bench who's really looking to score like 15 to 20 points a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the evolution when it comes to Gordon Hayward. And like I've been saying, tomorrow or when they play again, they do play it again on Tuesday. So tomorrow, when you listen to this podcast, things could change. He could have an awesome game against Cleveland. He could suddenly turn things around and be amazing for the rest of the season.
Well, everyone's going to have an awesome game against Cleveland. Those guys don't play defense.
I mean, yeah, sure.
They did just trade for Nick Stauskas though. So who knows?
Well, you know, anytime you get Sauce Castillo, things can get really wild. I just wanted to make that point about Gordon Hayward. It's a season long thing, and it may bleed into the summer. I just think that it was important to note that Paul George made these comments about Gordon Hayward. So you wanted to make a point about this game about Al Horford.
I just want to give Al Horford more credit. I know I touched on it in the first segment, but this third quarter of this game, the Thunder opened up the quarter on this 18-7 run. They were really – it was Paul George scoring 9 points in basically the first 3 minutes of the quarter, causing turnovers, just doing basically getting the ball off the floor. And then Al Horford basically took over the game, at least offensively, just from his passing alone. He found Smart for three, I think two or three times, but it was also knocking down those shots. And then – later in the game, he really found Kyrie Irving again and again. I was very impressed by Horford's passing. The Celtics answered that run with an 18, or what started as an 18 or an 8-0 run, evolved to a 16-2 run, and it just felt like it was really facilitated by Al Horford. So I have to give him some credit for just kind of putting the Celtics back in this game. I thought he did an excellent job. And then I also just wanted to note some damn good performances off the bench from Daniel Tice, mostly just Daniel Tice. Rozier ended up with 10 points. I didn't think he was great tonight. But Tice being able to come in with Aaron Baines hurt, which we have not talked about. Aaron Baines apparently broke has a cuboid contusion in his left foot, and that's going to be a problem for the Celtics. He's going to be out a couple weeks. But I thought just to focus on tonight, Baines coming in, giving them 17 minutes, 14 points, 5 of 6, and knocking down both of his threes. I didn't think he was great defensively. I thought he got attacked by Westbrook a couple times, but Tice did gave him a little bit of that punch on offense, which is what they're going to need. They're going to need kind of as many positive minutes from people at the five, not named Al Horford, basically in Baines' absence.
So Al Horford, let's start with that. His 9 assists, 3 of those went to Kyrie Irving. He now is the top assist man for Kyrie Irving this season. So 41 of his assists have gone to Kyrie Irving on the season, more than anybody, about two or three more than Marcus Smart. So he and Kyrie have worked out a very nice kind of dynamic between the two of them. And I asked Brad Stevens about it, and he made a point about Kyrie's cutting. And so Kyrie, one of his strengths, Al Horford said it in the locker room afterwards, one of his strengths is the cutting. And it's hard when you're Kyrie Irving to be off the ball and cutting, and if there's nobody to pass you the ball, what good is the cutting? But when he's cutting off of Al Horford, having that big man and their work together, it's really benefiting him in that regard. So Al Horford
and all the attention that just those two players get from the defense, like the Thunder, I think we saw it tonight. They get so much attention, especially if there's a high pick and roll, that Marcus Smart was wide open on the weak side a couple of times. And if he's going to be able to shoot like this, like new Marcus Smart, it's going to be really hell to pay for a team. So I guess come to playoffs, just if, cause that's the, I think the brilliance about Horford is he can find the Kyrie passing, like Kyrie cutting back door, but he's also very aware of what's going on the other side of the floor. And if they overplay one, he's going to pass to the other.
Yeah. Five of his assists were for threes. So the nine assists led to 23 Celtics points. The other point that you made now, Aaron Baines, let's talk about that for a quick second here, is that Aaron Baines is going to be out at least through the All-Star break, which is a problem for the Boston Celtics because Al Horford, I think at the beginning of this game, I think was especially a little passive. And I think he was in that mode of, okay, I don't have Aaron Baines. After the game, he was asked about Aaron Baines, and he just has this like very kind of strong reaction whenever he's asked about Baines being in or out. I think him without Baines behind him makes him just like a little bit more passive as a defender. And he just says, it's better for me to be on the floor taking a half step back on defense than going all out, knowing that I've got Baines behind me. If Baines comes in, it's not a big drop-off. Baines being out hurts. The fact that, first of all, two things I noticed. One was Al Horford against Steven Adams was better than I expected. He was taking Steven Adams to school offensively. He was dropping in those little hook shots. He really
His footwork is so damn good.
It was amazing. Like, he was amazing in the post. That 8 of 13 was awesome from Al Horford. So that was number one. Number two, like you said, Daniel Theis coming in, hitting 2 of 2 from 3 was especially big. He hit some big run-stopping threes there. I thought that was a big, big deal for Daniel Theis to come in and give them those minutes. I don't know that he's going to be able to do that every game. We'll have to see depending on the matchup. But whenever Aaron Baines is out, to have Theis in there and be productive, that's huge.
Yeah, they just need size and bulk. I mean, I'm just looking at the lineup the next five games they have before the All-Star break. Cleveland shouldn't be a big deal. Los Angeles is not the biggest team. Neither are the Clippers, but there is another game against the 76ers and going up against Embiid, and then a game against Detroit with Andre Drummond. It feels like always kind of punishes the Celtics, especially on the glass. Baines being out and just having Horford in there, it's going to be something that they're going to have to survive. And Brad was talking about it before the game about kind of Theis versus Yabu. If you're really talking about like having to guard size, you kind of expect Yabu to be in there, but he's both of them. They're not the amazing player. Like they both have some flaws to their games. I think Theis is more polished in terms of like footwork and know what he's doing, but they're going to have to definitely survive some time without Baines, which we've seen in the past is not the easiest thing for these Celtics to do.
Another guy that deserves a shout out before we move on is Marcus Smart shooting those. He's 4 of 9 from three. Like, Marcus Smart, the shooter, is for real. At some point, and I wish we had Jay King on the show, at some point we got to, like, end the skepticism, right? Like, Marcus Smart's shooting this season is for real.
Oh, yeah, he's back. I thought I saw a stat today. He's shooting better three-point percentage now than Kevin Durant. Well, I think he's, like, the 99th best three-point shooter in the league now. You can fact check me on that on your own time, but I'm gonna go with it.
I'm also gonna go with it. In fact, we're gonna take a break and we're gonna come back with tweets and junk drawer and the answer, the fact check on that question. Stick around. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. Before the break, we asked about, well, we mentioned Marcus Smart's three-point percentage. Marcus Smart, you are correct, Sam Packard, in that Marcus Smart is now currently, as we record this podcast, at 11:41 p.m. on Sunday night, February 3rd. He is ahead of Kevin Durant.
He's a better three-point shooter than Kevin Durant.
He is.
I think it's fairly obvious. The numbers don't lie.
36.7 to 36.6. Marcus Smart is currently ranked 69th
in the tight NBA.
He is currently the 69th best three-point shooter in the NBA, which I present to you with a completely straight face. Okay, your tweets. Not a whole lot of Rain and Jay's tweets. In fact, I'm looking at this game and I'm seeing like three of them. So, like Alex at Straight No Chaser said, "Playoffs, Al," which was great. Jay King dropped the story and at K. Alsup said the kid dropping it like it's hot, which is a completely non sequitur for you guys listening to the podcast. And then this question doesn't even relate to this story. Like, people were just not using the Durant Jace hashtag to this game. But at Dallas Nelson 35, is there anyone in the league that's as good as getting to the rim but not finishing as Jaylen Brown?
There was one Jaylen play where he did a real sweet dribble move and then completely lost it on the gather. But
he did late in this game. Jaylen Brown he did a lot of good things. And then there were probably two or three plays where he did some very good things and then just flat out lost the ball. So, I'm just going to leave it at that. He still has work to do. He still has work to do when in regards to that. So I guess this brings us to the junk drawer, and that's
my purview. There are some hashtag rating junks from Robert Denton. I'm glad that Pistro Russell Westbrook got an L rating junk. I guess that we can just use it as a time to talk about Russell Westbrook's performance. He plays with the energy of an insane person. You even just see him come out of the court before the game, and it's like, man, that guy's crazy. Like, he's Bobby Portis level of crazy, and he plays with such a pace. I think Jay King tweeted this, was like, he doesn't probe the defense. He just like smashes into the defense and sees what happens.
Yeah, that's right.
But he finished with 22 points, 16 assists, 12 rebounds. The 16 assists is the craziest part. He really just like – clearly he's not the same shooter he was, and he's not the same scorer that he was. His like shooting numbers have been atrocious this year, but I'm still just kind of impressed with his all-around energy level that's consistent throughout the entire game. He felt like he does a lot of guessing on defense and definitely saves that energy for pushing the ball on offense. But, man, he's a bullet. It was just – I was kind of – in awe of just his general energy the entire night.
Mm-hmm. That's just what he is. He's just one of those guys. Like, if he doesn't have that level, then he's just not who he is.
Yeah. This is from at Betsy May Patel talking about Kyrie Irving. This guy's been watching a ton of Marcus Smart's highlights. It's a response to Kyrie diving on the floor to try to get a steal from Russell Westbrook, and actually got a nice, basically an ovation from the fans, basically, because he forced a turnover. But Kyrie's defense was huge tonight. We didn't bring it up yet, but he basically, on the final play, Tatum missed his initial or one of the free throws to kind of put the seal the deal for the Celtics. So the Thunder still had a chance. Westbrook, with his insane speed and energy, comes down, and Kyrie made a real great play on the ball as Westbrook went to dribble behind his back, and Horford ended up with a steal, and that was the game. But just getting back to Kyrie's defense, I thought he was phenomenal tonight and really working his ass off. But I think he deserves a lot of the credit for, and it's one of the reasons I think we keep on saying this, but his defense tonight was top notch.
It was. I love the fact that the biggest ovation that he got was that dive on the floor. Like that was really, really cool.
I agree. It was like, man, Celtics fans are good. those were two like not very junky performances to start off the junk tour. So now to get to my actual thoughts.
Get to the junk.
Me and you, we got to watch Stephen Adams performing hand-to-hand combat training before the game in the hallway, and it was terrifying.
First of all, like, he's just a giant person. Like, you just don't understand how giant he is. He's a very large human being, and he's out there doing these, like, jiu-jitsu moves with that weighted thing, like, that, and fluidly, like, no one would screw with that guy anyway, but, like, man, it just says a lot about his pregame preparation that it includes like air combat fighting preparation.
I mean, he's just ready to do battle at any time. And
it's wild.
It was just really fun to watch. Moving on, the Thunder have a guy named Terrence Ferguson, but every time he does anything, I think I call him Turd Ferguson. Shout out to Celebrity Jeopardy. Early in the game, Marcus Morris had like 18 pivots before knocking down an open jumper. It's just some old school basketball stuff that you don't normally see.
That was fun.
Jumbotron segment of the night, they asked each of the Celtics what band they would want to join. And I was kind of surprised by the answers. We got both Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum said New Edition, and I don't know where that came from.
Shocking.
Kyrie said Jagged Edge, which is a random choice.
Not both shocking Mookins, to me.
Not too surprising.
Old school R&B. I'm in. Yeah.
Sammy and Mook said The Temptations, and then Gordon Hayward said Backstreet Boys, which was I thought was going to be funniest answer. And then Terry Rozier immediately came in with NSYNC. And then I give a lot of guff to the guys who run the in-game productions for what I would do. They came back out of that and played Backstreet Boys for Gordon Hayward. So that was some nice turnaround. Someone tweeted at Jay King tonight, "I hate Dwayne Schroeder. I don't remember why, but I know I'm going to hate him to the death." And I was trying to remember back why that beef started. It was an Isaiah Schroeder beef, but I don't really – I'm pretty sure Isaiah slapped him in the face, right?
I forget, man. I know Jay King tweeted something. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a thing. I don't remember why that's a thing, honestly.
But I agree. I'm glad Schroeder doesn't have the thing in his hair anymore, but my hate for him still exists. You got to keep the beefs. That's about it. Oh, the final thing, you pointed that out to me, but we did in the fourth quarter – hear a very, very faint "We want Yabu" chant. And that just warms the soul.
That was fantastic. So we will end this podcast on.
Oh, I got Super Bowl takes too. The best part of the entire night was when they used the SpongeBob reference during the halftime show.
Yeah.
Give me more of that. That was basically the best moment of the entire evening.
Yeah.
And why is Bud Light coming at corn syrup? What's the deal with corn syrup? I got no problem drinking corn syrup. I've been drinking it all my life.
I will say, I mean, as a beer guy, that was a bit surprising to me. And I get on Bud Light and these other light beer companies for all their crappy advertising because they never really do anything to say, oh, our beer is good. Like, they never advertise that their beer is good. They just advertise, like, bottles with mountains that turn blue or something else. Like, oh, we're going to...
Hey, our beer's cold. We got cold beer.
We got cold beer. Or we're going to make the bottle mouth open a little bit wider so you can get drunk faster. Like,
ooh, wide mouth. Yeah, that sounds good.
That was like... but. And I thought the ingredients things like, okay, like an ingredients label, who gives a shit? It's the same shit in every beer. However, as a consumer, I see corn syrup and I'm like, oh, I don't want to drink corn syrup. Like, I just, it sounds like gross. And so I,
that's what you're, you've already bought into big beer.
I've
man,
look,
they're controlling you. Drink more corn syrup. That's what I say.
I would prefer to drink none of the beers that were mentioned in all of that, including Bud Light, unless, of course, Bud Light wants to pay me to drink their beer, in which case we will...
Drink Bud Light. It doesn't have corn syrup.
It doesn't have corn syrup. It's the best beer ever. But anybody that wants to pay us to drink their beer, I'm always happy for that. But, like, I'm a total craft beer guy. Like, I'm happy to go and actually... When I talk about ingredients in a beer, like... it's not even what, like rice in a beer, like even the Bud Light. No. Just get me some regular beer. Go to your local brewery, those little craft breweries that are always popping up around town. They've got good beer. Even if you're not, if you don't think you're a beer drinker, they've got a beer that I guarantee you will love. They've got everything. It's not bitter. If you don't want the bitter stuff, if you don't want an IPA, they've got smooth stuff. I'm a total craft beer guy. Anyway, okay, podcast is almost over, but not before we acknowledge the greatest quote exchange in, I believe,
the
history of basketball. And it comes from our friend, Brooke Lopez. We are big fans.
Recurring guest on the podcast.
We are very big friends.
Did we even post the audio of me asking him questions?
I don't know.
No, we didn't.
You didn't.
Recurring guest on the podcast.
Brooke Lopez, the Lopez twins, are both big. We're both big fans of the Lopez twins. So Brooke Lopez was asked by SB Nation about this bat infestation. So bats apparently are everywhere. And I saw another video.
No, just in San Antonio, right?
Right. San Antonio has a bat problem. So... Brooke Lopez was asked directly about what do you do about bats, and he says, quote, "If you've learned anything about the modern superhero myth, if you see a bat around and it bites you, you have a 75% chance of ending up a superhero. Otherwise, you probably get really sick, but it'd be cool to be a superhero. You don't need to be too afraid. I'd say give it a shot." The follow-up question was, "So you're going to let the bat bite you?" And Brooke says, "Yeah, absolutely. And are you going to just stick out your hands?" And Brooke says, "I'm just going to make myself available. At that point, it's up to the bat. A lot of it is up to fate in these superhero stories, but I want to give myself a shot." And I just want to say, the line, I'm just going to make myself available at that point, it's up to the bat, is just pure genius and really one of the most brilliant lines ever spoken to me in all of human history. Shakespeare be damned. That is brilliant to me. Shouts to Brooke Lopez, who is now currently my leader in the MVP race.
The thing that makes it most impressive to me is that I genuinely believe it.
Absolutely.
Like, he's just, he would not move out of the way, and he might offer himself up to be bitten by that bat. The Lopez brothers are just out there enough. So major respect to noted Simpsons fan and noted twin, Brooke Lopez.
I think Brooke Lopez would be around that bat and be like, you know what? What the hell? What's the worst thing that could happen? I get a little sick. What's the best thing that could happen?
I become a Batman.
I literally become a Batman, and that would be awesome. Like, he would be the guy. And if I ever wanted anybody to become an actual Batman, that I'm going for Brooke Lopez. Absolutely.
Oh my God. He'd be terrifying. A 7-foot Batman.
If I'm in trouble and Brooke Lopez, the 7-foot Batman, especially now with his long range shooting ability, I think that's the hero that we both need and deserve.
Hear, hear.
All right, we're going to wrap up this podcast. I want to say thanks to everybody for listening on this Super Bowl Monday, the Super Bowl hangover. I can't wait for the Boston Celtics to honor. This is going to be a great Thursday. I mean, Thursday is going to be nuts. The Lakers are in town. The
trade deadline.
Trade deadline. We've got the all-star teams being picked, and now the Patriots are guaranteed to be in the house with that trophy. Like, that Thursday is going to be crazy. So I can't wait for that. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this. Can't wait to talk after that. I hope I get to see some of these Patriots behind the scenes and maybe take a picture with the Lombardi trophy. That would be amazing. So I'm just throwing it out there. If anybody who's affiliated with the Patriots that likes the podcast and wants to just kind of make that happen, I'm just saying, go ahead and do that. We love the Patriots on the Lockdown Celtics podcast. Go ahead and listen to Lockdown Patriots, by the way. Full Super Bowl coverage on the Lockdown Patriots podcast. If you're a Patriots fan, go check that out. Of course, subscribe to us. Give us that 5-star rating. Give us that good written review. And share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, pack it in, Jay.